I told you I'd forget something. Sister Toni Sims is recovering from the virus. I cannot believe I did not mention that. It's written all over my paper I had. But she is recovering. She is doing well. She comes out of quarantine tomorrow. So we're hopeful that she's going to recover. Jennifer and Chris were tested again, and both were tested negative. So we're grateful she's had not had it as bad as some others have had it, and it looks like she's going to recover. We're thankful for that, and we hope and pray that, as we do always, that no one else here will have to contract the virus. In the last couple of months, I have been trying to focus our attention on lessons that can be learned by this past year of what we've had to deal with the pandemic and other things that have happened in our country and the difficulties that have ensued. But I want to talk to you this morning about our world in general, and especially here in this country. And I think we're not being honest, and I think we're not really being honest with ourselves if we don't acknowledge that all the things that have transpired in the last year can have the ability to shake your faith and begin to wonder about the future. And begin to wonder about what lies ahead and how we should move forward. I want to acknowledge to you this morning, first of all, that our world is broken. There's no way to get around that. There's no way to mince words. There's no way to sugarcoat it. There's no way to make it sound like it's not what it is. Our world is in a mess. And our country is in a mess. And our country is in a mess, and the world's in a mess. And all the problems can be traced back to the same thing. And that is the exemption of God in the equation. When you remove God into any situation and you remove him, you remove his counsel, you remove his wisdom, you remove his guidance, and you begin to try to make your own way, and you begin to think that you're the smartest person on the block, and you begin to think that you have all the answers, and you know the problems, and you know the solutions, and you can enact them, and all of it's going to come out for the good, then you're just foolishly misguided. Because you're not going to be able to fix the problems that we have in this society, in this world, until you get back to God. Until you get back to the wisdom and the counsel that be contained in this world. We have seen our world under fire. We have seen marches of hatred and bigotry. We have seen the abortion issue take front and center stage again. We have seen hatred on a capacity that I have not seen in the 66 years that I've lived on this earth. I have never seen the degree of hatred that I see today on both sides of the aisle. Brother, this past week, we have people that are trying to cancel out culture. They're trying to cancel things out. We have people that want to take two U.S. senators who oppose things that they saw as being wrong with our election process and put them on a no-fly list because they're terrorists. Two American senators. We also have those in our government who are calling upon this nation to not hire any of the previous administration that's going out the door on Wednesday, not hiring them, blacklisting them, so they cannot work because they disagree with their politics. We have others who are trying to say, we had last week, we had another impeachment trial, as if we hadn't had enough of this in the last 4 years. But they did a snap impeachment. Now, this is not a political, let's just talk about reason. Let's just talk about what's right. No witnesses, No lawyers, no evidence, nothing was examined. You just had 2 hours. If you wasted your time, and that's what it would be, it'd be a waste of your time. For 2.5 to 3 hours, all they did is bash the president in the will of the Senate. You know why they could do that? Because they changed the rules that they could say anything, even if it was derogatory, towards the president of the United States, and it was okay because they rescinded the rules. Now what have they found out? Now they found out that there was a plan in place. Now they know they have arrested a fellow that had a plan in place, that this was known on Monday, and that the government was warned on Monday, the Department of Justice, that there would be an attack upon the Congress. And now they're finding out. But why didn't they wait? Why didn't they wait for the evidence? Why didn't they wait to see what it would tell them? You know why they didn't? Because of hate. Hate. Pure, unadulterated hate for another person. Brethren, what has led us to where we're at? What has led us to the depths that we have sunk in the last year? Really, the last 4 years. Or I can go back further than that, go back to the last 12 years. When the previous president, President Obama, was in office. These last 12 years have been nothing full of hate. And what has it caused? Are we better for it? Are we stronger for it? No, brother, we're worse off for it. And this world is broken. Well, what do we do from here? Where do we go from here? In Ecclesiastes, which is a book of wisdom, written by Solomon by the inspiration of God, Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 5:15-16, he said, as he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return, to go as he came, and he shall take nothing from his labor which he may carry away in his hand. And this is also a severe evil. Just exactly as he came, so shall he go. And what profit has he who has labored for the wind? Throughout this book, the wise man Solomon is trying to find out the meaning, the purpose, and the things in life that can bring us happiness, contentment, peace, and give some meaning to why we're here. And in this whole letter, in this whole book, Solomon is in a position, because of his unique position of being king, of being the wealthiest man on the face of the earth at the time of his kingship, and having wisdom that was given to him by God that surpassed any person that lived before him or any person that lived after him, and he could do and buy and have and pursue anything this world has to offer. And he did it. And now he's looking back. And he's reflecting. And he's wondering what he learned. And what can we learn from his experiment of trying to bring contentment and peace and happiness and satisfaction into his life. And you know, his conclusion is that it's vanity, that is vexation of spirit, and it's striving after the wind. Why does he feel that way? He didn't feel anything in life in the long run, in the final analysis, really matters. But you know why he reached that conclusion? Because he left one vital thing out. He forgot about one thing. And he forgot to include somebody in this exercise. And that's God. But when he interjects God into it, then he begins to see things from a very different perspective. When he begins to see God, and I know I turned it on. Yeah, I did. He begins to see things in a very different way. Brethren, you didn't bring a thing into this world, and you're not taking a thing out of it. There's nothing that we've accumulated, nothing that we've gained, nothing that we have earned or merited in our lives that we're going to be able to take with us when we leave. All it is something for somebody to clean up, to throw out, to buy, or to argue over after we go. That's all it means. And yet we spend our whole lifetime focused so much on the here and now that we forget about the hereafter. And that's what leads men to live broken lives. It goes on to say in verse chapter 6 and verse 1, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common to men. What is that evil? For there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. Well, that's true. Romans 3:23 teaches that same truth. He goes on in the book and says, in the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider it. Surely God has appointed one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. Yeah, you know, Job learned this lesson. You can have good days. You can have days that everything goes pretty well. And then all of a sudden, your life can be turned upside down. All of a sudden, your life can be turned upside down, and everything that mattered, all of a sudden, it doesn't matter anymore. It's not something that you're even considering. It's not something you're even worrying about anymore, because different things have happened in your life, and now things are different. It's not wrong to enjoy your prosperity, but don't fall in love with it. Don't get enamored with it. Don't think that it's always going to be that way, because it's not. Because life changes. Life changes. In Romans chapter 3, Paul wrote, what then? Are we better than they? Not at all, for we have previously charged both Jews and Greeks that they are all under sin. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none who understands. There is none who seek after God. Brethren, does it appear to you today that there's a real axe of the people seeking after God? There's a real void, isn't there? There's a real vacuum. Where people aren't, they're brazen. They don't have any fear of God. They don't have any fear or respect for God. And they're not worried about what their actions are going to cause to happen. There's cotton, brethren. You're free to do whatever you want. You're free to choose whatever path in life you want. But you need to understand, and they need to understand, that there's consequences to choices that we make. There's consequences to decisions we make. There's consequences to the path that we choose to walk down in life. There are things that are going to transpire because of the choices we make. There are things that are going to happen here because of the choices we make. There are things that are going to happen here and now that will be based upon the things that we do today. But it also has a far-reaching effect in what will happen in eternity. And sometimes we become so tunnel vision upon here that we forget about the hereafter. And we forget about the eternal ramifications of the things that we get enamored with and do today. Brethren, I can assure you that through time, evil and hatred and malice and ungodliness has never worked to the good of any nation, of any person. It has never worked. It has been an exercise of people from the time of the Garden of Eden until the time that this world will end, and they will all get the same answer. It never profits them in the long run. Never, ever. And yet they continue to go down its path. Why? Because they are ignorant of the wisdom of God. This world is broken. Bad things happen to good people. There have been hundreds of thousands of people that have died from this virus. Good people, hardworking people, people who have wives and husbands, sons and daughters, people that made a difference in the world and the community that they lived in. and they've died. I can't tell you why it was them and not me as yet. It still may be me. I don't know. You don't know. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 8, Solomon wrote in verse number 12, he said, though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God and those who live in fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he be prolong his days, which are a shadow, because he does not fear before God. There is a vanity which occurs on earth, and that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I say to you, this is also vanity. Brethren, there are good people who suffer. Job suffered. What did he do? What evil did Job do? Job didn't. You know why Job suffered? Because he is a just man. Because he was a just man that feared God and eschewed evil. That's why he suffered. That's why Satan attacked him. Because he tried to prove that if you turn his world upside down, he'll curse God to your face. He'll walk away from you. When you take away all your blessings, when you take away all the things that you've given him, and you take away all the things that you've made his life one of success, when you take all that success away and you take all those blessings that make his life joyful, when you take all of that away from him, he'll have nothing more to do with you. That was the debate of Job. Job's debate is, God says, no matter what adversity, no matter what man's situation is in life, he will serve me and love me. Satan says, no, he won't. He says, if you take away the good in their life and you take away the difficulty in their life, then they will desert you. That's the debate. That's what's really going on in Job. Well, who was right? God was right. Even when all those things happened to Job, he didn't blame God. He didn't turn his back on God. He didn't quit serving God. And you know what that proves? That proves that man doesn't just serve God for what he can get from him. See, God was right. Job was right. But that doesn't mean good things, bad things won't happen to good people. Folly often exists in high places. Maxine Waters, and I could use a lot of people in Washington. She just happened to be the picture I pulled up. You remember what she said in December 2018? She was out in front of the White House. She was on the Capitol steps, and you know what she said? He said, if you see any of Trump's cabinet come in a restaurant, you see him going to a gas station, you see him coming to a place of business where you're at, you run them out. You tell them to get out. You tell them they're not welcome. You tell them to get out and you don't want to see them. And you do this to everywhere they go. Let me ask you a question. Could that incite a riot? Could that incite people to do evil? You know, here's the problem I have, brethren. We don't have a justice system anymore. We got a two-tiered justice system. And you know what? I don't believe that because I've watched Fox News. I believe that because I can see with my own eyes. And I can hear with my own ears. And there's not equality. But you know what? That doesn't worry me. You know why that doesn't worry me? Because I know a place where there is equality. And I know a place where it's all going to be balanced out. And I know a place where all of it's going to have to be answered for. And even though Ms. Waters may not believe it, maybe Ms. Pelosi doesn't believe it, and maybe some of those on the right don't believe it, I believe it because I know it's true. I know that there is a time when the court will be just. It may not be here, but there is a place where it will be. And we need to take comfort in that. Folly exists in high places. Brethren, you can't because you're in a position of authority, thumb your nose at God and think that nothing is going to happen because of that. That you can just make fun of people who have faith in God, and you can belittle them, and you can ridicule them, and you can just take God's ways and you can just brush them off and deny them. You can do that. God will let you do that. But if you think for a moment that God's not going to have a response, then you indeed are foolish. You know what? You could call a lot of people's bluff, but man alive, I would never call God's bluff. You know what they say? You don't want to poke the bear. You want to take pot shots at God? Is that a wise course to pursue? And you know what, brethren? That's what our nation's doing. Our nation is just really ridiculing God. And they're ridiculing it by the decisions they're making. Do they think God's just going to take it forever? They think God's just going to just say, well, you know, that's their choice. I'll leave them alone. History tells me God's not going to do that. Oppression acts are committed and innocents have no recourse. In Ecclesiastes 4, in verse number 1, it says, then I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed, they have no comforter. On the side of the oppression, there is no power, but they have no comforter. You know, I watched this summer. I watched citizens of our country go into a store and remove everything that was in it. And not one of them went to jail. I watched them burn down a police department, burn it to the ground, and not a thing happened. And people wonder why it went on for all summer. Brethren, when you take the teeth out of the law, when you don't reprimand destructive action, what will it cause? It will cause more destructive action. If you don't, what good is it? Let me ask you a question. Is it wrong to steal? Is that against the law to steal? If you went into the, let's say you went into the Dollar General down 127 and you decided you needed some groceries, but you didn't have money, you just go in there and get them. Put them in the car, go out the door. And then when the police came to take you away, said, wait a minute. You can't arrest me. I've been watching the TV. People have been doing that all summer. There's nothing happening. You can't arrest me. Well, as you're going to jail, you hope you have to get a phone call to call a lawyer because you're going to jail. You know why? Because that's against the law. But let me ask you something. If you knew you weren't going to be prosecuted, would you be afraid to do it then? If you knew you could get away with it? Are we this stupid in this nation? Are we this stupid that we don't realize what we did when we did nothing? I watched a lady who had a business in Minnesota. Matter of fact, it was a foreign lady and her family and her daughters and her sons. And they had built that business for 25 years. And it was finally beginning to make money. And they were finally beginning to make a profit from it. And they watched looters go in and burn it to the ground. And you know what? They were immigrants. They weren't white supremacists. I watched another black lady who had a family business and watched them torture her business to the ground. She's about 65 years old. And she was out there crying. And she asked the question, why are you doing this to me? You tell me my life matters, why are you burning my business to the ground? But you know what all that was fueled by? Hate. Pure, unadulterated hate. What did it accomplish? Chaos, grief, pain, misery, and untold lives have had to suffer because of it. Do they care? No. And you know what's worse? My government didn't care either, because they allowed it to happen. And that's all of them. I'm not calling out one party or another. They're both responsible. Nobody stopped it. You know why? They don't have any fear of God. Justice takes too long. So long, in fact, that it encourages evil. You know, listen to what Solomon said centuries ago. Centuries ago. Listen to what he said in Ecclesiastes 8:11. He said, because the sentence of evil, because the sentence against evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the hearts of the sons of men are fully set on them to do evil. You know, the current president that we have right now, he reintroduced the death penalty when he took back, when he came into power. And this last weekend, two more people were put to death that had been on death row for many for decades. But the first thing our new president is going to do is repeal that. And he's going to put a moratorium on doing the death penalty. When a sentence is not speedily enacted, it will ensure that more evil will come. Has that proven to be true? Has that proven to be accurate in our day and time? You see, God doesn't know what he's talking about. That's what people think. But God proves to be right there. God proves to be right when oppression is done and nobody is punished. That brings on more evil. God's right about that too. No satisfaction in the just living. What will not provide satisfaction? No satisfaction in just living. If you want to just go through life, get what you need, have what you want, read the first chapter of Ecclesiastes. If you just want to go through life, you know, life seems monotonous. Sun came up tomorrow, comes up today, comes up tomorrow. Cycle, the water goes into the ocean through the rivers and it comes out again. The water, it rains in the ocean, but it's never filled. It just seems these monotonous cycles. Life's just one cycle of monotony. And if you're just there to live through life, you're not going to get any satisfaction out of that. If that's all you're living for is here, you're robbing yourself. Because there's no lasting satisfaction of just going through life with no purpose, no meaning, no plan. That's not going to bring you any kind of satisfaction. No satisfaction in knowledge. What good is knowledge if you don't use it? What good is it to have laws on the books if you're not going to enforce them? What knowledge is there that's going to help us if we don't put it to use? You know, in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18, God's word says that God's foolishness is wiser than man's wisdom. You know, Romans 1, verse 20 says that because of the knowledge of God, man is without excuse. Man has no excuse to not believe in God. Man has no excuse not to consider God in every decision that he makes. He has no excuse not to do that. Because God's attributes are seen even though he can't be seen. In Acts 17, Paul is talking to the Athenians who are idolaters. And he says in verse 19, and also those, many of those who had practiced magic Excuse me, I'm in the wrong chapter. I knew that sounded wrong. Chapter 17, verse 19. And he took him to brought him to the Areopagus, saying, may we know of this new doctrine and of which you speak? For you are bringing some new things to our ears. Therefore, we want to know what these things mean. For all the Athenians and the foreigners who spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or to hear something new. You know what? You new knowledge, that's fine. It's not wrong to learn new things, but what good does it do if you take that knowledge and you don't use it? You got knowledge to have any benefit has to be coupled with wisdom. You see, wisdom is what is wisdom? Wisdom is the value of using knowledge correctly. Wisdom is defined by using knowledge correctly. If you have the wrong knowledge, it's going to produce the wrong wisdom. If your knowledge isn't from God, it's not going to produce good wisdom. Period. Take a look around. Is it working? Is man's knowledge bringing him wisdom? Take a good look at our country. Something's wrong. We're looking at the wrong knowledge because it's not producing wisdom in our lives. No satisfaction in wisdom that is not based upon true knowledge. No satisfaction found in pleasure. Solomon's tried every pleasure that he could afford or he could do that was given to men to do. And when he did it, he said it's temporal. Doesn't last. Doesn't bring any long enduring quality. And so it's vanity. Not found in culture or wealth. Solomon has a lot to say about that. He has a lot to say. Men that have silver and gold, their eye will never be satisfied. Money will never buy you happiness. It will never buy you contentment. It will never buy you the meaning of life. I don't care how much of it you have. It can never bring you the best things in life. Oh, it can buy you a lot of things. It can keep you from being in poverty. It can do a lot of things, but it can't bring you the meaning of life. It can't bring you happiness. Can't bring you contentment. Can't do any of that. And it can never really satisfy you. And the Bible's full of verses that teach us that. Now, things that will provide satisfaction. Good friends and good food. Believe it or not, Proverbs. All those Proverbs talk about good food. And Psalms and Ecclesiastes chapter 2. I want you to take your Bible and look at that. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, Solomon talks about friendship. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Verse number 24. It says, there is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy the good of his labor. That also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man that's good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting, and he may give him who is good before God. This is also vanity. And grasping after wind. You know what? God gave us blessings and gave us opportunity to make a living, to take care of ourselves. You know, God didn't put us here on earth to be miserable. God didn't put us in here that we would not be able to provide for our own, that we would not be able to enjoy things that we attain to in life. God wants us to enjoy those. He wants us to share those things. He wants that to give us to those that we have responsibility for. But you see, what he doesn't want us to do is get so enamored with that we forget about what's due to God. You know what? How much are good friends worth? People that won't tell you what you want to hear, but people that will tell you what you need to hear. People that have a deep sense of concern for another person. Can you have too many of those kind of friends? Can you have too many of those kind of people that will direct you into the direction that you need to go? Kind words. You know what? Sometimes all people need is a kind word. In Proverbs, which is a book that talks a lot about this, in Proverbs chapter 10, in verse number 19 and 20, Solomon wrote, "In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little." You know, sometimes all people need is a thank you. All they need you to do is to listen when they're hurting. Tell them that you're thinking of them. You're praying for them. You know, one thing, one of the kind words that I've tried to be very careful about using in my lifetime by my experience is when I say things like, "I know what you're going through." You know what? When somebody loses a spouse that they've been married to for 50 or 60 years, or they lose a child, I really can't understand what that's like, because I have not personally had that happen to me. But you know what? I can empathize. I can be to tell them that I know they're hurting. I know that they need people. You know, sometimes all people need to know is that you care. I remember son Connie Adams once said in a lesson I heard in Florida one time when he was giving a lecture at the college, and he was talking about when his first wife died. Connie's kind of a unique fella. He'd married two women in his life, and both their names are Bobby. And his first Bobby that died, Wilson's mother, he was talking about that in this. He was doing a lesson on suffering. And he said, you know, at her funeral, he said, there were hundreds of people there. He says, and you know what? They told me all kinds of things. They said all kinds of things. You know what? I don't remember a thing they said. You know, I don't. But you know what I do remember? I do remember they were there. I do remember they hugged me. I do remember the tears that were in their eyes. He says, that I remember. Those are little things. You don't have to say a lot. Kind words go a long way. You know, years ago, Glenn Campbell wrote a song, made a lot of money out of it, called "Try a Little Kindness." You know, I wish our world had more of that, where we would try to be more kind and congenial to each other than always trying to tear each other apart and destroy us by our words. Brethren, you know, one of the things that our new president has said a lot about, you've been listening to him, he's been saying a lot about unity, about bringing this nation together. And that, he's right, that needs to be done. We're never going to get anything accomplished if we don't have this, we don't stop this paralyzed atmosphere that we live in. But you know what? You can't bring unity to people when you begin to compare them to Nazis. That's not going to bring unity. When you begin to question their motives, that's not going to bring unity. When they disagree with you on principles that you differ with, that's not going to bring you unity. You can't attack another's faith, religion, or politics, and that's going to bring you unity. That's not going to happen. There's no kindness in that. There's no long-suffering in that. I've learned a long time ago, that people that have their minds made up, you can't change them. And so it's an exercise in futility to try. Kind words. Simple words. Good husband and good wife. You know what? I don't know what I'd do without Rita. There's times I get discouraged. There's times that I get down. There's times I don't know what to do. There's times I'm not sure what I'm doing is what I need to be doing. And you need somebody that can be a buffer. Somebody that can tell you what you need to hear, whether you want to hear it or not. That's one reason that God gave us marriage, is that we would have that buffer, that we would have the person that would know what we need to hear and what we need to do, whether we want to hear it or not. You know, what's that worth? You're not alone. You know, the Bible, in a lot of these things in Ecclesiastes, it talks about two are better than one. If there's only one and you fall down, who is it going to help you to get up? Companionship has great value. But again, you have to have a good relationship for that to be a benefit. But that can provide some satisfaction because you're not going through it alone. You're not having to deal with it alone. You deal with it together. That makes it easier to deal with. Again, and when that's missing in people's lives, I empathize with them. I know that's a great loss. And we should be, again, that's where kindness comes in. To live in the present. The past is behind, learn from it. The future is ahead, prepare for it. But the present is here, live in it. I can't do anything about yesterday. Yesterday is gone. I can learn by what happened. I can learn by mistakes. I can learn by the things that I did that were right. I can learn from the past, but it's gone. I can't do anything about it. And the future is not here yet. I can prepare for it. I can make plans for it, but there's nothing I can do about it because it's not here yet. But I need to live in the present. I need to do what I can today. You know, in James chapter 4, in James chapter 4, and this is a passage that you're all very familiar with. In James chapter 4, in verse 14 and 15. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It's even a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes away. Instead, what you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will do this. And we will do that. You see, you live in the present. You live in today. All I have control about is today. What I'm going to do today. That's all that I have the ability to concern myself with, is what will happen today. Doing a good job. You know what? If you're in a job that you don't like, your job's misery. I don't care if it puts food on your table, provides your living. If you don't like it, it's a drudgery. It's something that is distasteful. You know, I want to do a good job. You know, I remember when I was in the military and I had to make a career decision. You know, I was happy in the military. I enjoyed my military career and I met good people and I had a very good job and I enjoyed it until I started preaching. And when I started preaching, I didn't enjoy it like I used to. It didn't have the happiness that it brought me that it used to. And the reason is because I found something I wanted to do more. Something that brought me a lot more satisfaction. Something I was a little much more happy doing. And so that's why I got out. Because I found something that I wanted to do more that was more satisfaction. You know what? Sometimes we have to make that kind of decision. If we're very unhappy in what we do, instead of remaining unhappy, either learn to like it or learn to do something else. Because if you do it and you don't like doing it, it's just nothing but drudgery, and you can't do a good job at it because you don't like it. That's not what you do if you don't like what you do. You're really not being fair to your employer because you're not doing the best you can. But as Christians, we ought to do the best that we can in anything that we do. Except without complaint that life's not always fair. You know what? Life's not fair. Life's never been fair and life's never going to be fair. People who are evil don't always have bad things happen to them. people that are good don't always have good things happen to them. Sometimes the innocent suffer with the unjust. Sometimes the people that are trying to do the best are the people that suffer the most. I don't understand it. It's just the way life works. But you know what? We have to understand what Philippians 4:13 says. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. I can just get through it, do the best I can, and that's all I can do. Don't try to complain all the time. It just makes your life very miserable. I have come that you may have life and that you may have it abundantly. Ladies and gentlemen, in closing this morning, here's what I want you to understand. Life is broken. This world is broken. And the only way to get back is through God. We are never going to fix this world's problems. We're never going to learn the true meaning of life. And we're never going to be able to enjoy the things of this life if we don't have God in this equation. Now, you know what? I can't do anything. Everything I could do about the people in Washington, I did it on November the 3rd. Now it's done. I've got to move forward. I've got to do what's best. And what's best is for me to trust God, do things God's way, and to pray for my leaders, to pray for our country, and to pray that they will wake up. And to make sure that because if they want to go in the wrong direction, that I will not join them, that I will not become disillusioned. Now, brethren, what I'm trying to tell you is I understand what's going on around us. I understand how discouraging it is. I understand how discontenting it can be. And I can understand how weary it can become. Believe me, I understand that. But, brethren, I'm not going to let it destroy every good gift that God brings me in my life. I'm not going to let it destroy all the blessings that God showers me on, and I'm just going to be consumed because everything is going in the wrong direction. You know what? Am I concerned about the direction this country is headed? Yes. What do I do about it? I pray about it. I pray fervently about it. And I try to demonstrate to others that there is a better way. And all of us can do that. All of us can show that even though the world is going in the wrong direction, we're striving to go in the right direction. And that there's a better way. And brethren, that's the way you change the world. You don't change the world by changing Washington. You got to change the world one heart at a time. And you got to work on the people in the world. And when they get their hearts right and when they get their focus right, it will begin to show itself in the people that they put up in Washington and in civil government. But if you got people that think like them, if you got people that live like them, if you got people that act like them, what kind of people do you think they're going to put there? The people that are just like them. We have to give men and women a better option. And that option is with God. Brethren, I don't know what the outcome will be. I got a good ideal. If they don't change their course and they don't consider their ways, I got a real good feeling about where it's going to lead, and it's not good. But you know what? I can't control them. I can only control me. I can only control what I can do in my life. And what I've chosen to do is to give men an example of a better way, of a better direction to follow, better counsel to seek, and a better wisdom to go after. And that's all I can do. But you know what? If every Christian understood the value of that in their lives and that the effect that we could have on other people, we could bring about a change. There's supposedly a lot of us in this country. And if we all don't lose faith, don't lose hope, hold on to the Lord and do it His way, we could bring about a change. we could bring about a change. Do we have enough faith that we'll try? The real question is, brethren, the world's broken, but what about you? Are you broken? Are you damaged goods? Are you living without any happiness, without any joy? I can't answer that for you. But I can tell you this. You don't have to live that way. You don't have to live broken lives. You can live in a different way. And you can find contentment. And you can find joy. And you can find peace. And you can find happiness. And if you have God in your life, He'll be the source to show you how to do that. If you're here today and we can help you in any way in making your life with God or encourage you anyway by praying with you and for you, we're here to do that. And if we can help you, please come forward as together we stand. And as we sing.
What can wash away my sins? Nothing but the blood of Jesus. What can make me whole again? Nothing but the blood of Jesus. Oh, precious is the flow.